available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We're wrapping up spring ball. We got some early season television times. I know there's exciting stuff, Dave, for late May, but we do got some football stuff to talk about, which is great. I love that.
We love football stuff here on this podcast about football stuff. We do love it.
Not always football stuff. Yeah, so we're going to talk about all that and some more. We got a bunch of questions, a lot of questions for a midweek podcast, but hey, it's great stuff. I'm glad you guys are still engaged and sending us stuff. If you have any questions or comments for us, the best way to get a hold of us, probably our email, pac12podcast@gmail.com. We look at it at least 5 minutes before we start our show each and every week. You can also call or text us, 424-532-0678. Perk's been pretty consistent leaving us voicemails, so anyone else want to jump in there with voicemails too, but thanks, Perk, for sending those voicemails. You can also tweet us at Pac-12Podcast and the website, Pac-12Podcast.com, where you can find all the old episodes. Go over to the Reddit page, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions, and chat with other POC fans. And if you got the Apple Podcasting app on your device, on your iPhone, your iPad somewhere, please follow us, the Podcast of Champions. Please rate us 5 stars. That's what we love. And then say whatever you want about us. And whatever you say, as long as it's 5 stars, we will read it.
That's exactly right. And I've got one for you right now.
Nice.
This is from B.A. Tool, 5 stars. Subject line, it's fine. Body, sometimes good, but mostly fine. Love it. Perfect. Perfect review. You want to know why it was a perfect review? Do you know why, Ryan? Because I know why.
I think I know why.
Because I had 5 stars.
I like it.
We've got a very low bar for a perfect review. You just got to hit that 5-star. The rest of it, I mean, it could be written feces, and we would read it. All you got to do is those 5 stars, baby.
We've had some versions of written feces before, but we've had some just, you know, brilliance out there, you know, like Great Expectations level prose that people would write in.
But we're very socialized. These are all perfect. It's a binary scale, ones and zeros. The ones, those are the ones that are 5 stars. Those are perfect. Those are perfect reviews. And then, thankfully, very few zeros out there.
Yeah. I'm a little under the weather today, if you can tell my voice. Hopefully you're doing better, David.
I'm splendid. Never better. I will carry this show on my back as I do each and every week.
Yes.
The preparation time, the production afterwards, it's all on these shoulders.
Oh, so I can leave the office after we're done?
Nah, I mean, I might be a little bit busy afterwards, but, you know, as with most weeks, you know, much of the production falls on my shoulders.
Well, we probably should start with the spring football games. They're all done now. Stanford had their game on Saturday. And if you follow Yogi Roth on Twitter, he was tweeting about it a little bit. Seemed sort of vanilla. I think they ran 46 plays. It was live on the Pac-12 network. It's the Cardinal and White spring game. And, you know, Stanford site called it balanced. That's what you want in a spring game. You don't want any excitement. You want some balance, you know, both sides. But quarterbacks, Jack West, Tanner McKee, Dylan Plouts, Ari Patu, and they had some other guys out there too. So it looks like McKee had the best stats. He only threw 8 passes, 6 of 8 for 68 yards and a touchdown. But nothing like terribly exciting, as you could tell. They have their opener against Kansas State in Arlington, Texas. We'll talk about that in a little bit on September 4th. Kickoff classic there. But yeah, nothing too exciting going on. You only got 46 plays in your spring game. I don't think it's the hype train is going on. But any thoughts from Stanford spring game, David?
Is it all right if I say no?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it a safe place to say no? Because I have no thoughts on anything you just said, and I certainly didn't watch that spring game.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was. They got some sacks, but they're the no touch variety, you know, because you got to protect
right.
the quarterback.
So fake sacks, not real
fake sacks. Right. But it was only three. Like a lot of spring games we've seen have like a crap load of sacks. Yeah, it's just not.
Are you finally coming around? You sound curiously unenthused about a spring game. Are you finally coming to my way of thinking about this?
You know, if you're gonna be like super secret about everything, if you're gonna be Utah and nobody can see anything, or you know, Stanford, I don't think there was a lot of access. I mean, it's just like, okay, what do you want us to talk about? And you have like a pretty lame balanced spring game. It's like, okay, there's not much there. But you know, some of the places, like I'll talk about Arizona's, they had a lot of fun, you know, that was cool.
No, if you make it a spectacle, I'll talk about it excitedly.
Gronk catching a pass.
It doesn't like it's practice. It's like talking excitedly about, I don't know, a month of practice. That's all it is. You can call it a spring game, but it's not a spring game. It's just their final practice. That's it.
So that was on Saturday. Pretty normal, right? Yes. Was Stanford going a little later? Fine. Riddle me this. We're recording this on Thursday, May 27th. At 9 a.m., I got a call from a reporter we know that was talking to me on his way to UCLA. And I was like, why are you going to UCLA right now? I was like, oh, UCLA was having their spring game on a Thursday at 9 a.m. I don't know the rationale behind this. If you're trying to like help the Pac-12 network, would you rather have some content on the weekend or something rather than Thursday at 9 a.m.? I don't know. But it was live on Pac-12 Network. I'm going to leave this one up to you since you cover the Bruins.
Yeah, so it wasn't actually a spring game. I think that was the branding the Pac-12 Network used, but it was literally just another practice, like very literally. They just did like their usual periods and everything. And I think the network broadcast, I think, was mostly interviews. Like they were just trying to fill time throughout the whole thing. So from like a spectacle standpoint, it didn't even hit the bar of Stanford. Right. Like it was not even a game. Certainly not something you would like, you know, oh, there were 46 snaps or whatever. It was, you know, their usual practice. That said, there were a lot of guys held out for this practice that if Chip Kelly said afterwards, you know, if there had been an actual game today, like 90% of the guys who were held out probably would have played. But like guys like Britton Brown weren't there. Most of the starting receiving core weren't playing. So it was, I mean, even in as much as spring games or final practices of spring don't matter, this one was even more so. Broadly, I would say the spring, it's a unique situation, I think, for a lot of teams this year, but UCLA, maybe in particular, there's just so much depth. Because usually in the spring, it's a lighter period because you don't have your graduated seniors and you don't have most of your freshman class in. But I think this year, not only did UCLA retain most of its potential graduating seniors, but they also, I think, enrolled a lot more of their transfers and freshmen than they typically do at this point. So I think it was something like 112 guys were available, including all the walk-ons, which is an abundance of riches for spring, which made it all, you know, we've had, you know, watching UCLA in the past, we've had times where we're watching, I don't know, four scholarship linemen available at different points, and that wasn't the case this spring. So that was kind of, you know, cool to see. Guys who stood out, I mean, Zach Charbonnet, the transfer from Michigan, looks pretty good at running back. He'll compete with Britton Brown there. He was kind of the star of the practice today. Jordan Genmar-Keith, another transfer, has looked really good at linebacker. Unclear yet if he might compete against Bo Calvert for time. Maybe that could get cleared out by the fall, but we'll see. But he's looked good and certainly playable. But everything else, I mean, it just looks like a team that's improved. I would say they changed out strength and conditioning stuff in the offseason. And looks like they're prioritizing more lineman size. The offensive line just looks generally bigger. But yeah, I mean, it's an experienced team now. There's depth at a lot of spots. Still some question marks. I mean, Bo Calvert's a question mark at middle linebacker. That was a big issue last year. And as of now, it still seems like they're rolling with him as their Mike, but that might change by the fall. Safety play was an issue last year. Haven't seen much change over there yet, but at the spots where they were pretty good last year, it looks like they are bigger and more experienced and deeper. So it should be interesting to see if Chip Kelly can finally win a non-conference game at UCLA.
Yeah, they got a good shot. So we'll see how that goes. That's the biggest spring recap you've ever given here on the Podcast of Champions.
I had to do it for you. And I will say one of the biggest takeaways is lighter and fluffier Chip Kelly. He was positively effusive in his interviews throughout the spring.
Really?
Yeah, like did a really bang-up job. Maybe part of it was he wasn't on camera for most of it. He could just do it over the phone. I think he might be one of those guys who's just kind of uncomfortable on camera, which totally understandable. That's fine. But he was better over the phone. So,
yeah. There you go. All right. Well, that's no more spring football. So the Pac-12 is
Thank
finally.
God.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about that for another year. We do have kickoff times, though. So the early season TV schedule has been announced. If you've been on social media, there's lots of hubbubaloo going on. Week zero starts off. UCLA is going to host Hawaii. So try to get that out-of-conference win early on, David. That's Saturday, August 28th, 12:30 p.m. Pacific on ESPN. So that's going to kick off the season. A lot of the big non-conference games are on Fox, so I think that's a good thing for the conference. So UCLA, LSU is 5:30 p.m. on Labor Day weekend, and Colorado is going to host Texas A&M at 12:30 on September 11th. So there's also Oregon, Ohio State, and Washington, Michigan. They're also September 11th. So the one in Columbus, Oregon, Ohio State, will be 9 a.m. on Fox. And in Ann Arbor, 4:30 p.m. on ABC. So those two big ones, you got an early one, the big Fox, kickoff, the new kickoff thing. And then a primetime-ish game, 5:30 p.m. ABC in the Big House. So those are some really big ones.
All right. Great. We've got game times.
Yeah.
National nightmare of not having game times is now finished.
You don't Great. Care. There's some other highlights. So Stanford and USC.
It's not that I don't care, Ryan.
Yeah.
Not that I don't care. It's important to know when the games are. Would this information be fine if we got it 3 days before the games? Also, yes.
Well, not That's if you fine. Want to tailgate and stuff. People get mad. They don't want to do that.
How long do you need to plan? Are you going to put meat in a deep freezer?
Plan a lot.
Okay, so if you've got to travel for a game, is it really going to matter if it's a 9 a.m. game or a 12:30 game?
Depends when your flights are. You could fly out that night. Or
if you're tailgating, you're not flying. You're driving some RV or some crap.
You can drive and have a tailgate. I mean, you could fly. Whatever. All right. Well, there's a few other things. So Stanford at USC, so that's week two. That's going to be on Fox at 7:30 p.m. So Fox has never had a Pac-12 after dark game, David. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. That's exciting.
Now they do. There are some other Pac-12 After Dark games on September 11th. So San Diego State at Arizona is on Pac-12 Network. That's 7 p.m. 7:15 p.m. Utah at BYU on ESPN. 7:30, UNLV is going to be at Arizona State, ESPN2. Also at 7:30, Stanford at USC on Fox, like we mentioned. And then 8 p.m., Hawaii at Oregon State on FS1. So September 11th, can we get five screens going at once for Pac-12 After Dark? That seems a little nutty.
That seems great. That seems great. And I don't have to bother with a UCLA game to watch that weekend either. So I can really get nutty with it.
Yeah. Arizona, Jed's Fish. He'll start his collegiate career as the head coach at Arizona against BYU in Las Vegas. That'll be September 4th. That's a 7:30 p.m. kickoff on ESPN. So that's kind of cool. Colorado's going to host Minnesota on the Pac-12 networks. 11 a.m. Mountain Time. That's September 18th. With some other ones. There's some more September 18th games. Idaho at Oregon State. That's a 12:30 p.m. game. What we got?
So there are going to be football games at certain times.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. There's some Pac-12 Network games again. You know, we didn't see much of that. You know, it's the big ones we mentioned early on. You know, that Oregon, Ohio State, and Washington at Michigan. I mean, those are pretty big. I think what USC has. What's it called? They play at San Diego State. They have San Jose State, and that's going to be on Pac-12 Network. So USC's first game is going to be on the Pac-12 Network. I guess I got to get the Pac-12 Network again because I haven't had it for a while.
There you go. I thought spring practice was going to be your gateway back, but apparently you have kicked the habit.
Yeah, I didn't. It just wasn't that much. But there's four games on the Pac-12 Network on opening weekend. So Oregon's going to host Fresno State. Washington hosts Montana. I'm getting into the Montana stuff. You just went to Montana. We got a Montana question.
We got two Montana questions.
Ooh, and I'm still watching Yellowstone. Then USC hosts San Jose State, and then Washington State hosts Utah State. So four games on the Pac-12 Network opening weekend. I gotta get a sling again, I guess.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Well, those are game times. Probably talked about it more.
I hope everyone is writing them down. There will be a quiz later.
Yeah. Ethan Garbert's got cleared, so Washington's not going to block him anymore. I know there was some question about the length of his is it signing
residency
his NLI
or some crap?
Yeah, I don't know, but that's going away, so that's good.
Yes, very good. Good on Washington for doing the right thing after all other opportunities and ways of doing things were exhausted.
Yeah. And Lolani Lange, so he was a former three-star recruit that was committed to Boise State, did a mission, went to Washington State, and did spring camp, but he's back in the transfer portal. So I think he was only coming in as a walk-on anyway, but we're going to start to see some portal action.
What about your boy? What about the USC guy?
Jay Toya. Jay Toya tore it up for USC this spring. Had been committed to USC since from Grace Brethren since 2018. Kind of crazy. Had a great spring. Seemed to do really well and has entered the transfer portal. So that's concerning for USC fans. That just broke yesterday. So we're trying to find out some more.
Now, so this is my question is how can Clay Helton be expected to deal with these kind of unexpected travesties? Unexpected occurrences. I think this gives him a major pass, not only for this season, but maybe the next four.
You have a lot of making up to do because you really trashed Helton for a while. And so you got to get back on the keep Helton around bandwagon again.
Well, I'm just saying he's losing potentially an anchor of his team for the next 4 years unexpectedly. He was building a lot around this guy. I think this absolves him of any responsibility for the record the next 5 years.
We got
years, I would say, because he could have redshirted this year, but really helped out that scout team.
We got some tweets. What was it? So I was tweeting with David about the show. I'm like, I tweeted him, show Thursday? He's like, sure. And then I look up Urban Dictionary, and they're like, they say sure is like the worst way to answer a question. I'm like, oh, that's pretty much David. Then I text him three. ? He says, sure. Then I ask him a series of questions like to make him say sure. So he goes, sure, 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 sure. And then a not sure at the end. But I thought it was kind of funny. But someone wanted me to ask you, would it be okay if UCLA gave Chip Kelly a lifetime contract? What would your answer have been? Sure.
Yeah, that's probably a sure. Okay. Because would I be okay? I wouldn't self-immolate. I might want to. But yeah, sure. I'd be okay. It would be funny. At a certain point, you get less upset that it's bad and more you just got to laugh, you know? It's kind of funny. So, yeah, I'd be okay. I think it was fun.
And then Webfoot tweeted us, I'm having a rough week. Give me a podcast soon or I'll use my connections to ensure both Chip Kelly and Clay Elton get 10-year contract extensions.
That's what we're here for, to prevent that from happening.
So what's why we're on the air. We're talking right now, Webfoot. So you don't have to worry about that. So all right, good stuff. Let's see. What is the other?
Stanford's not going to cut any sports teams, baby.
Yeah. What did so? There was a pretty big outrage. They had, I think it was like 36 strong or something, because there were 36 teams. Some of the Stanford, like I think the wrestling team would wear their singlets inside out. Like there was a lot of stuff that they were sort of like disassociating themselves from Stanford. And these are like teams that are like winning national championships. So it was a fairly big pushback. I believe Stanford came back and said, hey, we'll keep you guys, these programs if you can raise the money, and that's not going to be a problem at Stanford. So I know you're shocked about this, but it's a pretty big reversal to cut 11 teams and then not cut any of them.
Yeah, well, I think they completely misjudged public opinion, because this is all just a PR thing both ways. They wanted to cut it. Wilner seems to think it was because of scholarship numbers. I'm sure it's just the same private equity cretins that ruin the entire country are trying to ruin Stanford too. But regardless, either way, there's always the money at Stanford. Stanford is a money tree. They can afford to have 100 scholarship sports. They can afford to have 200. It doesn't matter. These things don't cost that much money, especially the sports they're talking about. So it wasn't about the money, or at least not in any real way. So there was enough outcry that they couldn't justify doing it, which is great. But they shouldn't come out of this looking good. This is yet another way they have looked like ass in the last year.
Yeah. Did you catch the Netflix documentary about the Varsity Blues, by the way?
No.
I don't think the reviews were great. It was pretty much, it was like they used all the dialogue from the wiretaps, but they just reenacted it. So they had like actors and stuff doing it. And
like a mid-90s TV movie. That's great.
Yeah, I don't think the reviews were great, but it was cool to just sort of get a recap. But they did interview the Stanford sailing coach. And, he was claiming that the Stanford athletic director knew, what's his name? Why am I blanking on the mastermind's name, the guy that turned everyone in. I can't remember his name. But anyway, he said that he knew the guy, Richard Singer. And so the sailing coach, who got fired right away, had said, that the athletic director knew about him. And it was funny. I mean, the Stanford coach, the sailing coach, was actually the only coach that didn't take money for himself. All the money that was given from Singer for the bribes went to the sailing program. And he kind of painted a picture of, like, in the Stanford, like, they basically had, like, a meeting with some of the other coaches. And he said, I just won the national championship. And the athletic director didn't even look at me, didn't say congratulations, nothing. When they talked about fundraising, that's all he did is turn to me and say, hey, you're doing a good job with that. And he was doing a good job because of the Singer stuff. He goes, I wasn't a good fundraiser. Singer was definitely a way to, bring funds into the program. But Stanford denied that, that the AD knew Singer at all, and two, that anyone would get in with any sort of, donations to Stanford. Bullshit. Someone donates a building, you're getting in. But it was kind of interesting, but he was the only coach that was interviewed. So I guess that was some sort of new information there. But he didn't end up going to jail. They said he was probably the last, as far as severity goes, he didn't take any money for himself. It was just taking money for the program. So yeah. I don't know. Is that even what do you think? Hey, I'll let one athlete in for a bunch of money to pay for the rest of my athletes. I don't know. Maybe that's okay. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, bribes generally, I'm not a huge fan of, because it's essentially you're advantaging wealth and privilege. But legal bribes are still legal. Like you said, if somebody donates a building, they get in. To almost any private institution, and a whole shitload of the publics as well. So I don't think, closing this particular loophole, I mean, at least in this one, except in the Stanford sailing coach who didn't even take the money, silly. but at least in this one, you're, doling out some money to a private individual. The school bribes you know, buying a building for Stanford is like, I don't know, buying a building for Amazon. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
They don't need it. They really don't need the money. so, but, you know, if you're paying the sailing coach, well, like, I might need some money. I don't know. He's probably making $150,000, but he's living in Palo Alto. Maybe he needs a little bit extra money. So, honestly, on, like, a morality spectrum, maybe that's even a little bit better to pay off an individual versus paying off one of these, you know, blood-sucking institutions. But I could go either way. Generally speaking, all of it's bad, and it would be nice if they cut out all those loopholes, so that you wouldn't, you know, advantage yourself based off of your wealth and privilege. But that's the way this particular cookie crumbles.
Yeah, Singer called it the front door, which is like you just get in. The back door, which is you donate a building. Your parents, you know, whatever. Maybe not quite a building, but there could be, you know, whatever.
And then this is the sewer entrance.
They call it, he called it the side door is what he called it. Yeah.
Yeah. The worry is that you'll if it's the sewer entrance, the worry is that you'll get in there and then you'll smell like crap and they'll find you. You know, the back door, you don't smell like poop.
Which they did. It was funny. Like, basically some other guy got busted by the FBI for like some financial charges. And gives up Rick Singer. He's like, oh, by the way, you might want to check this out. They talk to the Yale soccer coach, who instantly flips on Singer. And then they talk to Singer. It's like they're already to the head of it, like super quick. And then Singer flips on everyone else, all the celebrities, all the, you know. And yeah, so it was pretty interesting. It just more of a recap, I think, than like any kind of gotcha new stuff. But, you know, and then I think it was the Yahoo Sports podcast. And like Dan Wetzel was going off on, you know, you were talking about privilege. Like, are there any underprivileged kids that are in the Stanford sailing program? Like, they went through like the list of high schools that these guys are like. So if you let someone in to the Stanford sailing program because he's rich, like,
are they already like redundant?
Like, I was gonna say, who's there? There's no one from like Compton that's in the Stanford sailing program. You're not going to be able to do that. So yeah, that's sort of like, I don't know about that program. You're like, yeah, you're already letting privileged guys. I don't know what would change if you like, you know, let the one rich guy.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know like the rowing program at UCLA. So you wouldn't think, obviously, like the people who are rowing before college are more than likely going to be, you know, wealthier people. Like, who else would take up rowing? But I know the rowing program was so big, the girls' rowing program, I should say, because it was one of the ways that they balanced the football scholarships. So they had a ton of scholarships for the rowing program. So they would literally recruit in the dorms just girls who looked big and strong. So I don't know if it's similar with like Stanford and sailing or whatever, but you could see a scenario where it's like that, where you're getting more, you know. Because how many people even sail before college? Like, is it that many?
I think
among the hoity-toity.
They're recruiting experienced sailors. Yeah, I mean that's just.
I don't know.
I don't think you're getting on a team like that. There might be some walk-ons or something, but if you're going to get a scholarship to sail,
I'm saying is like the girls' rowing scholarships, like scholarship athletes, were often just people recruited out of the dorms at UCLA.
Yeah, and I think that's common that they have to fill, and then you find people that are good, and maybe they start as a walk-on and they get a scholarship.
Yeah, but later, I guess we're moving far afield. I mean, yeah, and I mean honestly, most of the people who go to Stanford as scholarship athletes, they're self-selected at some level. But I don't know. I mean, getting somebody it's tough because sailing money, like you were in high school and you were a sailor, that's probably more than what even Rick Singer was paying off the sailing coach for, right? Like come from families that are in like the hundreds of millions of dollars, right?
You're going to a prep school. Yeah. You're not
not Lori Loughlin's kid, but even a cut above that. So I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit more equitable to have the kid who's gotten bribed to get in being on the sailing team versus the one who's actually worth several hundred million dollars, because they might only be worth $10 million.
Yeah.
Because they don't have enough money to buy a building, right? We're doing right by the middle of the top 1% of the country here.
So rich, but not rich enough to buy a building.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, we're just we're slowly, you know, slowly just balancing things. Very, very slowly. That's nice. That's what the goal was here.
All right. Well, that's all I got. Anything else? Will we take a break and do some questions?
Let's take a break and do some questions.
Back in a minute, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
All right. We're back here on the podcast of champions. Got all the news out of the way. We got to get some questions. We got a bunch of emails. I got a voicemail. Should we do that one first? We like the voicemails, right?
Let's do it. I didn't hear the music that goes in between, so I might not even hear this voicemail. So it might be all you, dog.
Ooh, okay. Hopefully you can hear it, but let me, I'll play it for you and see what happens.
Hey guys, it's Perk. There's an article in The Athletic about, a few weeks back, about the impact of the 2001 USC upset over UCLA and the crosstown rivalry. And it got me wondering, for both of you guys, what was your favorite game, looking back on the USC-UCLA rivalry, and also which one would you guys say is the best or the one that most people would think of when they think of the rivalry? Thanks, guys.
Were you able to hear that, David?
I wasn't, but I was able to read the transcript, so I think I got an idea.
Nice. All right, well, do you want to go first, then?
Okay, so my favorite game looking back on the USC-UCLA rivalry?
Yeah.
Well, of the games I've actually, paid attention to and watched, so since, 2000. Probably the 2013 game at the Coliseum. That was the one where Ed O was the interim, and there was a lot of, a little bit of shit-talking before the game, and then UCLA pretty much pasted them. The game opened with Caleb Beninock, I think, punching one of the USC players, if I'm remembering correctly.
Ooh, wow.
So it was that was a fun one. I could go really outside the box and say 50-0, because once again, it was hilarious. It was really funny, and it put the nail in the coffin for the Rick Neuheisel era, which was an essential thing to have happened. But that might be even a little too dark for even me. And honorable mention to 2006, 13-9, just because it was so weird and unexpected.
Yeah.
People don't remember that 2006 USC team was quite good.
They were really good.
Very good. UCLA had no business being in that game. And it was the muckiest, ugliest, but had so many dramatic moments. It was 13-9, but it was just these crazy defensive stop after defensive stop. Maybe the biggest punt of, in UCLA's last 20 years from Aaron Perez to basically ice the game at the end. The Eric McNeil catch for the interception. I don't know. Maybe I'll go 2006 instead.
Those are good ones. I would say the 2011 15-0 in the Coliseum, but I didn't want to see Rick Neuheisel go. So I don't think that can win. I mean, if you go back to your, like, when I was a sophomore, I went to the Rose Bowl for the first time. It was 1990, and it was the back-and-forth game, Todd Marinovich. USC won 45-42 with that Johnny Morton catch in the corner of the end zone, I believe. That was a pretty fun one. I remember that. That was, you know, the most excited I've been. My freshman year, there was a 10-10 tie. It was pretty boring. And UCLA wasn't very good that year. And USC went to the Rose Bowl that year, and they tied UCLA. But that next year in the Rose Bowl was that was pretty fun. I think, you know, from the USC fan, whatever, they probably like the 27-0 in 2001. Sort of like, you know, Pete Carroll sort of jumping on the scene and saying, here's what's, you know, things are going to be like or whatever. That was a pretty good one. But there was some fun. I mean, 13-9 was just like a wacky, like, as far as like memorable games in 2006, I'll remember that for a long time. I think the year before it was like 66-19.
I'll remember 66-19 until the day I die.
Wait, why was that? Why?
That. So if you remember, that UCLA team finished 10-2.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that UCLA team was 8-0 heading into Arizona, then lost the friggin' Willie Tuitama in like a 3-8 Arizona team. So that was bad. And then they won, I think they beat ASU. So they were looking pretty good. They were 9-1 at that point heading into the USC game and just got absolutely tattooed. Like, it was not close almost immediately. Just a complete and utter blowout. And it was like, how the did this team, and it was a joke, like they were, that was the whole year of like these insane comebacks for UCLA. Like I think Stanford game, they were down, I think it was like 24-3 with like 8 minutes to go and won. But yeah, no, that one just killed any possibility of hope that would finally be a Rose Bowl contender. So yeah, that one was fun. And then 2006 happened, which was cool. But yeah, I don't know, even though it was a UCLA win and that those have been hard to come by, I think 2006 is probably one of the more memorable ones. It's either that or 50-0. 50-0 might be a better indication of how the last 20 years have gone in this rivalry. But I don't know, 13-9 is pretty cool.
The 90s is memorable to me because, like, when I started my engineering career, I worked at Hughes Aircraft Company. And I worked for this guy, Pete Onoskonich, and he was a big UCLA guy. I think he was Penn State, but he did his master's at UCLA, which was, I was doing my master's, I went undergrad to SC, I was doing my master's because Hughes would pay for your master's. And USC had a like satellite program. You could watch it on video in a room, like somewhere at Hughes. So you could do most of your classes while like basically you're at work. UCLA didn't have that. So most people, most of the engineers got their master's from USC. But Hughes would have paid for UCLA too. Pete went to UCLA for some reason and was a huge Bruin fan. And I think they had won four in a row, and he wrote on his whiteboard in his office like four more years. And they kept winning like year after year. And I was like, damn it, Pete. And it was pretty funny. I had left a couple of years after, so I didn't get to see the end of the streak when he was around. But it was funny. And then in 99, when they ended the streak and won 17-7, I think that one's memorable too. But that was a long 8 years for USC fans, but I remember, you know, working at Hughes and having Pete there. It was close enough that, well, that, yeah, they had just won in 95. I think I was there in 95. They won the basketball national championship. So there, you know, people would put, if there were some, you know, some engineers that were Bruins, I remember them putting up the banners there, but that was a memorable time in that rivalry as well, I'd say.
Yeah. And you know, which team doesn't have an 8-game winning streak in the rivalry?
USC doesn't.
No, they don't. They don't.
Because of 13-9. It would have been.
That's right, baby. That's right, baby.
So even more, it wouldn't have just been 8.
It would have been all the way to 2012. So it would have been another 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, no, it would have been another 5 years on top of the initial 7 plus the 1. So
that's crazy.
You'd be looking at a 13-year winning streak.
Crazy. Yeah, 13-9. I'd have to take the cake for all that stuff. So,
yep.
All right. Let's see. I think the first email is a Montana one. Do you want to do this
all
one?
Right, I will do it.
Okay.
This is from Alfred Boomlang or Boomslang.
He either
spelled his name or this is a pseudonym he's not totally familiar with yet. Either way, Montana. Hi, Maeve and Brian. You have at least one Montana fan. Maeve, glad you made a visit to Montana, and just like a good SoCal boy, you came, spent your money, and went home. All jokes aside, here's some quick hit questions for you guys. One, over under 3.5, number of Pac-12 football coaches that get fired during or after the 2021 season.
I'll go under.
So the possibilities are Chip Kelly, Clay Helton.
I mean, who else?
I don't think Herm's a real possibility.
No.
I don't, obviously not Kyle Whittingham or Durrell. David Shaw?
No.
Like unexpectedly happening, maybe?
No. He wouldn't be fired. He would leave. Like they wouldn't, I don't think they could fire him. They would just have him leave.
Justin Wilcox?
I don't think so. I mean, they got enough problems there. I mean, if he's going to be pretty good. And
yeah, this is under. This is under. Because the only two real possibilities are Chip Kelly and Clay Helton.
Like, I'd have to think about it if you said 1.5.
Yeah. All right, two. The 2021 Pac-12 Football Coach of the Year will come from the North or South?
I'm going to go South because I feel like it could be an open race. And if Herm wins the South, he'll win it.
If Chip wins the South.
Yeah, he'll win it. You know, if USC or Whittingham, I don't know if they would necessarily win it, depending on what happens in the North.
If Clay Helton just finishes 5-4 in conference, he should win it.
Yes, that would be quite the accomplishment. But I'm going to venture the South because I feel like it could be ASU or, well, I'll go South. What do you think?
Yeah, South. Three, which happens first? The Pac-12 men's basketball or football team wins the national championship?
We've got this question like a number of different times, I think.
It's definitely men's basketball.
Yeah, I think basketball.
I don't know why.
UCLA?
UCLA is back, baby!
The Bruins are back.
All right. Four, what's better for the next media rights deal for the Pac-12? A deal with a major network, CBS, ESPN, etc.? Or a deal with a streaming service, Netflix, Amazon Prime, etc.
I mean, I think it's just, I think it depends. I think you need both to sort of drive up the price. And if you can get something done early, the Big 12 had an opportunity to try to redo their deal that is a year after the Pac-12. They have similar thing with Fox and ESPN, and they were not really willing to renegotiate that. But they've already got, the Big 12 already has more, you know, higher distributions than the Pac-12, and they get their own Tier 3 rights. So they're still in a better spot than the Pac-12 is. I think it might be better just exposure-wise for a major network, but I think you'd have to get something along with a streaming service, too, to help out. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the money. My whole theory on the streaming stuff is maybe you'll be able to get some kind of, like, sweetheart deal. Because, you know, you're taking a risk on them the same way they're taking a risk on you. So you could get a shitload of money. And they're starting from such a low point in terms of distribution with the Pac-12 network that literally any of these streaming companies has more market share than the Pac-12 network. So I could see it working for the Pac-12 in a way that it might not work for like the SEC. But I tend to agree. There needs to be some combination, combo effect here. But I would be open. Like if you're the Pac-12 and somebody offers you an insane amount of money to go be on Amazon or Hulu or whatever, then take it. What the hell? You're not losing anything. I mean, I think you're still going to have. I don't think they're going to be getting all of their rights for all these like big ticket games back. I mean, I think there is going to still be a combination, but all the Pac-12 network games that we've had in the last dozen years, put them on some streaming service. What the hell? Why not?
Yeah, I think you want to be able to be seen. If it's like some of the big games in the Pac-12 are going to be on like Paramount Plus, that's not good.
No. Don't you've got to keep it to like whatever the big five or whatever, which would be YouTube, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon.
Amazon, yeah. And I would think even more than YouTube and Hulu. Like I think more people have Netflix and Amazon. I mean, like there's a lot of people that have Amazon Prime that don't even get. But if you're like, oh, I can watch the Pac-12 on a thing I already have. I just need to like turn it, you know, download the app. Then it seems like most people have those, you know, where like Hulu, totally, maybe not as much.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it should be Amazon and Netflix if you're going to do it. And it looks like Amazon is the one that's more into it right now. But that might make Netflix be, you know, competitive if you actually wanted to see if they wanted to do it. So Amazon Prime has 200 million subscribers. Netflix has 200 million. Hulu has 40 million. And YouTube TV subscribers, 3 million. Yeah, so you're not doing YouTube. I think it's got to be Amazon or Netflix if you're going to do it.
Man, I nailed that.
Yeah.
Didn't even know. I just assumed.
You're the man. All right, and then the last one. Would you rather have a 3-round boxing match against a kangaroo or a blindfolded Conor McGregor? That's a tough one.
A 3-round boxing match against a kangaroo or blindfolded Conor McGregor?
It's got to be blindfolded Conor McGregor, I think.
Yeah, because I feel like the kangaroo might not come after you, but if he does, like, you're not hiding. Like,
if the kangaroo, this is going to be more about hiding. You're done. You're done if a kangaroo comes after you intent to, like, actually do you harm.
Yes. So I would think blindfolded Conor McGregor, like, I feel like you could avoid the big punches potentially, but if it's a boxing match, he can't, like, grapple with you. If it was, like, MMA, he could stumble on you, and then once he feels you, could get you in a toe hold or something, and then you're just screwed.
I don't think I would win either of these, I'll be honest, but I think I have a higher percentage chance against Conor McGregor, because what you could do, and I mean, it's not great, but I mean, we're talking boxing, so you got to follow the rules, so that's a
right, but I think you can, I mean, you could roll around on the ground, like, you can, like, get the hell away from him if he's coming after you. You can, you know, do the quiet place thing and just not make a sound, and then, like, punch him in the back of the head.
If it's boxing rules, then you throw his grappling ability, right? Like, he's not grabbing.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you, like, basically, if he, like, tripped over you, you guys went to the ground, like, you're getting back up. He can't. But if it was a MMA thing.
If it was MMA, I think it would almost be easier, because you would just, like, sneak around behind him and, like, kick him or whatever, right?
No, because if he just gets a hand on you and he's on the ground, like, he's going to just mess you up, right? And they're not going to stop it. In boxing, like, he couldn't do that. Like, I would fear just him accidentally touching me and then, like, getting me in some kind of hold and I'm done.
Yeah, that's probably what he would do, is just, like, full-on, like, airplane, right? Like, just do, like, helicoptering around. Like,
just swinging his arms. As long as he could touch you,
grab something.
Yeah. And with this, you might be able to sneak behind him and get a punch in, but I think you would just, like,
but you
run
can't
away.
Punch in the back of the head in boxing, can you?
I mean, you could punch him in the back or something, right? Or no, like.
Can you? I don't know if that's, so here's the thing. I've never seen a boxing match where, like, this has actually happened, where you can get behind a guy. Can you punch somebody in the back?
I don't know. Maybe from the side. You could do that on the side, I would think. But, like, I don't think you would risk getting close enough to punch him, because.
But that's another problem, is also, like, he's a lot quicker than either of us are, like, in terms of, like, his hand speed and everything. So you connect on a punch, you've got to move your body so fast, because he's going to be flashing out at the angle that punch came in immediately. I think you're getting your ass kicked either way, but I'm still taking the blindfolded guy.
I think I'm going to take the blindfolded Conor McGregor. That makes sense.
Yep.
All right, we got one from Rich. He's about fly fishing, and he's from the Evening Hatch Fly Shop. So awesome to hear you guys talking fly fishing for a minute. I'm a fly shop owner in Ellensburg, Washington, a lifelong USC fan. We are 2 hours east of Seattle on the Yakima River. Next time you're up this way, come a day early and do a float and fly fish. It's a beautiful river with lots of trout. Thanks for all the hard work, guys. Awesome stuff. Fight on, from Rich. Rich, I'd love to do that. So,
all right. So anybody out there, in case you know, we don't end up doing this, but if you want to go fly fishing 2 hours east of Seattle on the Yakima River, Evening Hatch Fly Shop, ask for Rich.
Yeah, go check it out. But yeah, we'd love to, you know, maybe Dave and I make a trek up there sometime.
Maybe we will.
Yeah.
All right, this is from Hitler Day. All right, you look up this title. It's,
I don't really have the energy, but I'll try.
Okay, okay. Fine, I'll do it.
No, it's fine. Jesus.
Unus ad bigus. All right.
Yeah, this is a weird one.
Is it take one for the team? Is that what it's? No, I don't know.
I get how to pronounce it in Latin.
I'm getting that too. Why won't it? Damn it.
It does. What does take one for the team mean? Maybe that is it.
Ut unus ad bigus.
Yeah. See, I told you, I didn't have the energy. I just felt like this was not going to be a good one.
All right. Well, whatever. Ut unus ad bigus. Let's say that the nine Pac-12 schools on USC's schedule decide their collective best interests are served by Clay Helton keeping his job. Okay, so it is take one for the team. And conspire to throw the minimum number of games against the Trojans in order to keep him unfired at the end of 2021. What is the optimal set of wins and losses for them to do so? So, in the schedule, USC misses Oregon and Washington from the north. My guess is that USC sweeping the non-con plus wins over UCLA, ASU, Arizona, Utah, and Stanford would do it. So 8-4 winning the South and beating three rivals, that'd be enough to retain Helton, right? But it still lets Colorado Wazoo, OSU, and Cal get wins over USC. That would shore up two second-year coaches and validate Smith and Wilcox building their programs up. Meanwhile, the ADs won't fire Fish in his first year or Sean Whittingham ever, so they can take it. Would it force a hasty firing of Kelly or Edwards, though? Do you boys think Helton needs to hit a different threshold to keep his job or have an alternate solution?
I think it's a different threshold.
I think you're hopelessly optimistic.
No, just from the sources I've talked to, I mean, they're hearing it constantly. I don't think 8-4 and winning the South is going to sneak, be enough. If you're talking about win the Pac-12, and if USC went on to beat Oregon, if taking one from the team, if that's what these schools want to do, you will let them win the South. I mean, win the whole conference. Yeah. Plus, I don't think if you're taking one from the team, are you going to let? Okay, we're going to let this team win the division when Herm could win it. Utah could win it again. Chip could win it. I don't think this would fly, and I don't think it would be enough. I don't think you could do an optimal thing where you'd keep everyone else happy and do enough for Clay Helton to get retained. That's my opinion, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, but as a thought experiment, I don't hate it. Because it is basically figuring out, okay, well, what record actually, keeps our boy exactly where he needs to be, keeping USC right where it needs to be, right where it should be at all times. And I think 8-4 winning the South and beating three rivals, a lot of guys might talk a good game heading into that, but if that's what happens, I think the AD might have some trouble making that decision. Particularly if, I mean, as you theorize, what if he then wins the Pac-12? Like, what if he then wins the title game?
If you win the title game, I think it changes the narrative. But I don't think winning the South is enough.
But
I don't see a scenario still, where this happens and you beat Notre Dame also. I don't see this plausible.
Think about the state of the USC fandom, right? Where they are 9-4 after winning the Pac-12, and then they just get absolutely murder stomped by like Michigan or whatever in the Rose Bowl, and they're 9-5. And you're just stuck once again in that absolute purgatory where you know, hey, this is the fool who lost to Colorado, Wazoo, Oregon State, and Cal. But we're going to keep him because he won the Pac-12. Like, is that the worst case scenario?
It could be.
I think Hitzlade's hit on the number. I think it is 8-4, but it does. I think to ensure it, it does require winning the Pac-12 on top of it. Like, you do have to win the Pac-12 title game. But 8-4, that keeps you alive. Like, that's alive heading into the Pac-12 championship game.
But if you're taking one for the team, I don't think anyone's going to sign up for, all right, none of you get to win the division, and then, oh, and you don't get to win the Pac-12 either. We basically need to let Clay Helton win the Pac-12 to keep him around. And
this is where your lack of a collective instinct really comes into play, because this is a communal activity. Look, they're doing it for the betterment of everyone. And, it's a concept that's foreign to you, and I understand
very, very foreign to me, yes.
But, they're making sacrifices for the common good. This is a very socialized attitude here from our man Hitler.
Nice Hitler Day. All right. Hitler Day the socialist. All right. Let's go Bernie. He's got a question for the podcast. Very descriptive subject. It says question for the podcast. So thanks. And now we know. I asked you two back in May of 2019, which program would win a national championship first, UCLA basketball or USC football? Back then, Dave said USC football was most likely, and Ryan, you agreed. Now, after this year's basketball tournament, you still feel USC is probably going to win one first. Thanks, guys, from Bernie.
No.
I think we both switch at this point.
Yes.
Absolutely. Especially seeing how college football has changed, that USC hasn't got its act together.
And Mick Cronin turned out to be a bang-up hire.
I don't know about that.
We didn't know.
But in basketball, like, you might not be Kentucky or Duke or whatever, but you can still make a run. It's so much harder now in college football. Like, you got to be Alabama level or Clemson level to win. Like,
or just kind of good, which USC also isn't.
Yeah. So I think UCLA showed that even with a roster that's not like the best, can still make a run, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I would go with UCLA basketball right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No question.
Thanks, Bernie.
Oh, wow. All right. Here's one. Oh,
I got the lucky end this time. This is good.
Yeah, you sure did. All right. Liv Moss. On my last email, I vowed to hit snooze again until August, unless we're asked to compare Pac-12 programs to salad dressings or something. Enter last week. There was a special request at the end of a misguided email about how playoff expansion would help the conference in recruiting or something. Dude, nobody is committing to Wake Forest because Clemson is good at football. Having our champion lose a quarterfinal game to two-loss Florida or Georgia doesn't help the conference keep coaches or recruits. When we go to 8, inevitable, that will become a baseline for the competitive operation. Nobody will look upon inclusion at 8 and celebrate our presence. The whole floor will be raised, and we still won't have a team good enough to compete. At 8, we're actually further away from a national championship than we would be if USC fired their coach, hired Matt Campbell or Luke Fickell, or even just drew a smiley face on a red balloon and gave it a little hat. If USC got aggressive, we could go back to the two-team BCS, and the conference would be closer to winning a championship than we would be at 8. I promise. This is not a just give us a shot scenario. We don't need an invite to a tournament we can't win. We just need one team to be good enough. Period. Full stop. Okay, so at the end of this playoff expansion misstep, which David rightfully took apart piece by piece, this person shifted gears into a genius prompt. The question was, please compare Pac-12 coaches to fast food restaurants. So, Kyle Whittingham is in and out. Strong. People should always have them in the conversation for best overall, but there's that one part of the experience that holds them back and doesn't allow them to quite get over the top to true elite transcendence.
Is he saying one part, fries? Yeah, the quarterback play is like fries?
Yeah, it's their french fries. Herm Edwards is Chick-fil-A. Seems like he takes politeness very seriously and couldn't handle business on Sundays. Ooh, like it. Love it.
That is really good.
Chip Kelly is Chipotle. There was a moment in the mid-2000s where this felt new and innovative. A heavy dose of the runs is a guaranteed part of the experience, but everybody overlooks that when talking about them. Jed Fish is Long John Silver's. This is a fish joke. As far as I know, nobody has ever actually been into, experienced, seen a Long John Silver's, so we don't know what to expect really, but I think we're all prepared for disappointment. Have you ever been to a Long John Silver's?
I believe so. Like, they were in... Like,
they're very bigger about out east.
Yeah, I was Western Pennsylvania, I think. I don't think they were in like Massachusetts when I was there, but it was more of like Pennsylvania, like Pittsburgh area. Like, that was more like, that's what you know, if you wanted seafood, you could get it there potentially.
Oh, yeah, not doing that.
Yeah.
Nick Rolovich is hot dog on a stick. It's easy to forget it exists, even though he's always over there smiling and wearing a silly hat. Carl Durrell is Jack in the Box. Actual dialogue happening somewhere at 3 a.m. Hey, Linda, you want to grab something? I guess, if we have to. Since we got ditched out here and nothing else is available, we don't have much money or any options, really. I know it was terrible last time, but I guess we could give this another shot. 8 minutes later, wait, hang on. I think this might be great. Linda, do we love this now? Yeah, it's surprisingly good. Let's give it a while to settle before making any real judgments.
Jack David in the Shaw- Box.
Yeah, no, Jack in the Box. That's perfect encapsulation of Jack in the Box. David Shaw is Arby's. He's stubborn. He refuses to change. He's committed to doing the one thing he does, even though nobody outside of the Midwest or under the age of 70 appreciates the thing he does. Four people would like this joke because four people eat at Arby's.
I don't think I've had a bad experience there. I just hardly ever go. And you see, like, the commercials for it. Have you eaten there, like, any time recently, or?
I've eaten at an Arby's once in my life, and I think it was 10 years ago.
Okay. It was okay, but, or?
I don't know, like, how much are you, like, ever just looking forward to, I need a roast beef sandwich.
Right, but I think when I've had it, I'm like, that's a,
it's fine.
Roast beef sandwich with cheese on it, like, all right, you know, whatever. I haven't tried all the stuff that they have on the commercials and everything, but. Yeah. Maybe they get a bad rap. We'll see.
Maybe Jimmy Lake is Carl's Jr. He's trying to sell the exact. He's trying to sell the same exact shit they sold at Hardee's, but telling you it's younger and sexier in the commercials. I guess.
I do want to know what that is, like the regional thing, because like in the South,
Hardee's,
I think it's
even sell the same. It's slightly different menu too.
It is different. Okay.
It's weird. It's weird. I don't get the relationship really. Clay Helton is Subway. Nobody does less with more or will make you feel more underwhelmed about the way you're spending your money. Seriously, this is the only one on the list where you regret the decision ahead of time. You regret the decision ahead of time. Actual dialogue happening somewhere at 12 p.m. Linda, let's just get Subway. It's already in our building, and it's easier just to keep the status quo than it would be to go outside the building and try something better. Yeah, and I'm on a diet, so here's $11. grab me a loaf of white bread and a bag of plain Sun Chips and a medium water and a macadamia nut cookie. Okay, two macadamia nut cookies. I sure do love being average. There's somehow more than 41,000 Subway locations on the planet Earth. Anybody who goes to Subway after 2 p.m. on a weekend is a sociopath. After 2 p.m. or on a weekend is a sociopath. Mario Cristobal is Hooters. He has boobs. Justin Wilcox is Jimmy John's. He's the same type of uninspired blandness as Clay Helton. He just gets there faster.
Nice.
Jonathan Smith is Taco Bell. Criminally underrated, affordable, and legitimately great. Makes the absolute most out of basic ingredients in a small budget. Nobody out here has anything close to a Crunchwrap Supreme or a Quesarito. It's time we all live Moss and realize that Jonathan Smith is probably as good as it gets in terms of delivering above expectations and resources. I got $6. Is anyone else getting me 6 spicy potato soft tacos? No, this is my dude. Keep up the work. Your friend and compatriot, Shane.
Hey, Shane, thanks. I am a Taco Bell idiot. Like, everyone has, like, favorite. I just hardly ever go there. When I go there, I'll order a couple things. It ends up being like $11. I'm like, what did I do? Like, people come in here and order like piles of food for $5. And I'm not sure what to do. You look at the menu. It's absolutely enormous. I get overwhelmed when I go in there. So I am not a good Taco Bell person.
Well, I would argue you're probably ordering too much. Because if you're ordering $11 of food at like Taco Bell, you're probably going to feel really bad about yourself afterwards too. Like that's a lot of Taco Bell. Cause like one quesarito, first of all, you're like setting off a bomb in your stomach. It's like, I swear to God, I think it's like 900 calories.
Whoa.
It's nuts. But it's delicious. Like I strongly recommend the quesarito, but you get one of those. That's it. And that's like $3.39. And you get a drink or whatever if you want one. And you can get in and out of there if you're ordering the right stuff for like $5-$6. You can get like a shitload of soft tacos for nothing.
I just get like, oh, I want this kind of burrito. And it's like, what?
Yeah, how does it like you're probably going a little bit too frou-frou. You're probably getting the burritos. You're probably getting some kind of weird like signature thing. Just, you got to go off like just the basic menu.
Yeah. Okay. I will make sure
Don't screw it up again. Don't screw it up.
We have a. I just haven't been talking about it a long time. We have a text message. Does he sign it from somewhere? I'm trying to see.
He does not.
He doesn't sign it. Okay. So he said, "I've been brainstorming a new tagline in case of the commissioner George Klyavkov actually gets some new TV deals. Here are just a few, and so here's the ones he has." Now with more 5 stars than the Pac-12, we are the podcast of champions.
Okay. I like it. Clever.
Yeah. Now with more fans than Stanford football, we are the podcast of champions. We already.
We could already claim that one, but okay.
Yeah. Now with less champagne than the WTA, we are the podcast of champions.
I'll say I like number one. I think we can probably still maintain this one forever. And I think it'll be really funny after the Pac-12 Network has been defunct for like 10 years to still hear that. All right. Are you ready for Brad in Portland?
I think I am.
Is this me or you? It's me.
It's you. Thank you.
All right. Hey, guys. Playoffs and history. The other week on the podcast, you guys were talking about the overtime rules changing. And Dave commented something to the effect that they shouldn't make any changes to the rules that would make the game less fun. Those aren't his exact words, but like Dave, I'm too lazy to go back 2 weeks to get the exact quote. Expanding the playoff is the way to add more fun, and this is how so. If you expand to an 8-team playoff with 5 auto bids, basically the old BCS, that means that any team that gets to a Power 5 championship has a chance to get in. Okay. Now, I know that you brought up that no ACC team other than the Clemson deserves to be in the championship. I contend, like the Memphis Grizzlies this year or the 10 wildcard teams to make the Super Bowl from the past, if a team wins a Power 5 championship, put them in and see what they can do. They probably lose in the first round and be out, but with it only being one game, you never know. Second thought, observation. Okay, so let's address that first.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Sure.
Like, I really am so tired of talking about playoffs. Like, I'm
tired of it too.
Oh my god!
If you
I have no energy left.
Yeah, I'll do a brief thing. If you want to argue that the playoff in a vacuum, an 18 playoff would be more fun than a 14 playoff, I'm willing to hear it from like just a pure enjoyment and fun standpoint. The concern would be that it continues to devalue and makes the regular season even less fun. Because if a conference winner can make it in, you know, your 5-4 conference teams, like those four losses don't really matter if they are able to win their division and get to the title game. It just devalues, you know, the it's not quite sudden death, but it devalues even more what was once essentially sudden death regular season. So I think it makes the regular season feel like it's less on a knife's edge. So even if you would say in a vacuum, the 18 playoff will be more fun than a 14 playoff, which obviously it's more games. So more games is better than less games. We all agree on that. It would the effect it might have on the regular season and the fun of the regular season would be my worry. Because look at the NBA. I mean, I think that's a great example. If you're a real NBA head, you still watch the regular season and everything. But now, I mean, it's the playoffs. And they completely have, I think, rendered their... First, it shouldn't be 82 goddamn games. But also, the regular season just... It sort of matters, I guess. But now you've got this play-in tournament where even if you're pretty crappy, you can make it in. And the NFL has always been kind of like that, but the NBA is getting even more so. So I don't want that for college football. I think I've made that clear. But that would be the even in the fun argument, I think you would still say the effect it might have on the regular season might make the whole expanse of college football less fun, even if the part that is the playoff is more fun, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I just got some bad news.
Oh, no.
I think I've been using the wrong microphone this whole time, and that's why you can't hear. So I think I figured it out. I think it's a webcam microphone. So my voice is probably not sounding so good on this one. And since we're almost done, we're just going to go with it. I'll figure it, fix it in post, right?
That's what we do, baby.
Yeah.
We fix it in post.
So Webfoot wrote in.
Wait, we got second thought observation that I didn't get to.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Second thought observation, hearing Dave talk about the glory days of UCLA and how they need to recruit better to return to them reminded me of how BYU fans used to talk about returning to the glory days of winning a national championship. This question goes out to that one listener who keeps trying to justify adding BYU to the Pac-12. When do you know that a program is just in a slump and can rebound, like Alabama, Notre Dame, or that the team's glory days are gone, Tennessee, Miami? Thanks for the time, Brad in Portland. I think that's actually pretty easy. If they have a recruiting base, they're just in a slump and can rebound. If they don't, Tennessee, you're done. Nebraska, you're done. You're done forever. Sorry. But Miami, you're going to be fine. Long run, you're going to be totally fine. Alabama, Notre Dame, you're going to be fine. Notre Dame, but probably going to be fine. The brand is too big. But Nebraska, you're done. Tennessee is done. They're done forever.
Yeah. I'd agree with you there. Let's see. Jay Toya. Hello, champions. I want to hear Ryan's take on the Jay Toya transfer, but first a joke. Why couldn't Justin Herbert listen to any music during his rookie year in the NFL? He just kept breaking all the records.
That joke. Love it.
Yeah. With that out of the way, Ryan, any insight on why Toya left? He stayed committed for 2.5 years, enrolls early, has a good spring, but then enters the portal 3 months after enrolling. I've heard bitter fans say that he's, quote, soft and can't handle USC football, but I've also heard conflicts with the coach and accusations of tampering for both the Bruins and the Huskies. I assume all of that is just Twitter nonsense, so I'm wondering if you know the real story. Thanks, as always, Webfoot. I would say read the War Room, Jay. We will put some good information in there for you. Not suitable for the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Smoking gun.
There you go.
It was Jay Toya on the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This is from Frank in Sacramento, Varsity Blues Review. Ryan, I heard your review of Varsity Blues movie on the other podcast. The funniest thing is that USC brought in its most selective and best freshman class in history this year, in spite of that scandal and all the others. It doesn't really seem to matter in the end. The head of the medical school, Carmen Pugliafito, is exposed using drugs and running with hookers. The campus gynecologist, George Tyndall, is arrested for assaulting young women for 30 years. The assistant athletic director and water polo coaches are accused of taking bribes. As you said, it's all about the prestige of going to USC. The kids and their parents want to go to the hot school. The fact that super rich people and movie star moms actually went to jail to get their kids into USC only made it hotter. What a tremendous USC attitude there. Love it. Frank in Sacramento.
So part of the documentary, they talked about it was what's the US, US News and World Report started ranking colleges in the 80s, apparently. And from what they said in the documentary, it wasn't about like endowments or enrollments or research or what. It was only about prestige. Like, that's all it was. And then they were like, the French word for prestige, I forget what it was. It's something about being deceptive. I forget exactly. But the problem is, yeah, like this, I don't think the scandal hurt your prestige. If they're like, wow, these people are willing to go to jail over like trying to get into your school. And you're mentioned like UCLA was involved. Stanford was involved. Duke was involved. Georgetown was involved. Like I think Harvard. Yeah, like. That doesn't hurt your prestige. So I didn't realize it was a more selective year for USC, but I don't think it hurt them as far as like people don't want to go there anymore. If anything, you know, it puts you in a category you might not have been in otherwise. Like, you know, you're with all these other schools. You're with Stanford. You're with Harvard. Like, that's crazy.
Right. All news is good news.
Like if you're – like if Arizona State was involved, like that would probably a boost, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like, hey, it's a big deal to go to ASU. People are like celebrities.
Yeah,
want their kids.
I guess that makes sense for these lesser schools that need the boost, like USC, you know, need that admissions boost. I don't know if it would have a meaningful impact on, you know, the most selective institutions in the country, like UCLA. But yeah, I mean, I could see how it could be an important boost for, you know, a regional school like USC.
They talk about it like that, like not like that, how selective it is each and every year. And the whole point of being selective is to add to your prestige. So schools can, they want to turn away a lot of people just so it adds that prestige level. Like if you're playing a role-playing game or whatever, like your prestige score, you want it to be higher. So admit less students and your prestige score goes up.
Yeah. So not like USC for most of its history.
It's I'm sorry, David, but things have changed.
They've gotten better at manipulating US News and World Report rankings, but yeah.
Apparently they have, yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. I really hope my voice sounds okay. My apologies that I just figured out the wrong microphone was on. Technology is a fun thing. Do I sound different to you, David? Did I sound
you
different?
You sound beautiful. You sound crystal clear. You sound like you just soaked your throat in whiskey. You sound magical.
Part of it is I'm sick, too, so I don't know. All right. Well, I'll play with this afterwards because, you know, that's not David's realm. But that's good stuff. We'll wrap things up. Thank you for all the questions. I am Ryan Abraham. That is David Woods. Thank you so much for listening to the Podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.